The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Werke, Judge Riley, Judge Friesch, the Honorable Renee Werke presiding. Now calling case number A21-1514, State of Minnesota versus Algie Leland Bossen.
Good morning and thank you for appearing on our Zoom platform. The rules of appellate procedure do remain in place, although we are proceeding via Zoom, except of course a standing requirement. Please state your name and indicate which party you're speaking on behalf of in advance of your argument so we can keep track of that for recording purposes. There's also a clock that our marshal is watching it's in the middle of my screen. Each of you has 15 minutes for your presentation. An additional 5 minutes is reserved to appellant for rebuttal counsel if you choose to use that. And appellant counsel, when you're ready to proceed, you may do so.
Good morning. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Juliana Passy, and I represent the appellant, State of Minnesota, in this matter. In this case, the district court suspended this murder prosecution against the respondent, Algie Vossen, for the 1974 murder of an elderly woman, finding that he is incompetent because he was not able to rationally consult with counsel due to cognitive deficits. Mr. Vossen was 80 years old at the time of the contested competency hearing that occurred on September 10th, 2021. The district court's order here was an abuse of discretion because the district court did not give proper weight to the evidence presented at that hearing to conclude that Vossen did not have the ability to rationally consult with counsel. And when he found that the state had not proven by a preponderance of the evidence that Mr. Vossen was in fact competent to stand trial.
Ms. Passy, why? I'm trying to get around the standard of review in this case. And if the district court had found Mr. Vossen competent to stand trial, we probably would affirm that given the standard of review. I don't know how you overcome that in this case. You're asking us to reweigh the evidence, it sounds like.
Well, Your Honor, the standard of review that's provided by the State versus Gampat case is that it is an abuse of discretion standard, but the Gampat case tells us an appellate court independently reviews the record to determine if the district court gave proper weight to the evidence produced and if its finding of competency is adequately supported by the record. And so that is my argument.
I read the district court order. It was quite thorough and went through, there were three experts and two thought he was incompetent and one thought he was competent. And the district court seemed to have considered all of those reports and wrote a very thorough order.
The state's argument, Your Honor, is that in evaluating the evidence, and I would agree that the district court did look fairly closely at the evidence, the state's argument is that the district court did not properly weigh the effects of the cognitive deficits that were found by the two experts who gave the neurological testing to the effect that those such deficits had on Mr. Vossen, as demonstrated by his complex answers to questions about trial strategy kind of issues, which would indicate his ability and demonstrate his ability to rationally consult with counsel.
I mean, you know, one of the problems that I think that this case presents is that everyone acknowledges that a neuropsychological examination has not been conducted here. I mean, Dr. Gilbertson made some arguments that his examination is just as good, but then he also conceded that a number of his testing metrics were unable to be completed by the defendant. So his evaluation was incomplete as well. And we have also in the record some objective evidence of white matter in the defendant's brain. And I just don't understand why it is that it's an abuse of discretion for the district court without having that piece of evidence, the neuropsychological examination, could abuse its discretion by choosing to credit one or two of these experts over another.
My response to that, Your Honor, would be that the doctor Gilbertson and Dr. Vaccarella were the two doctors who conducted what they called psychometric testing in this matter, which they both testified was the same kind of test that would be conducted in a neurological evaluation. The tests that the Dr. Gilbertson was not able to conduct were the tests based on the motor skills of the defendant, which the other doctor, Dr. Vaccarella, did in fact conduct and got really poor results based on those with the motor skills of the defendant, because he has an essential tremor in his hand, rendering motor skills tests to be not unable to be administered to the defendant, but not accurate measures of his abilities. So
my question, I think, remains, and that is, why is it an abuse of discretion for the district court to say, you know, I don't have the definitive, I have something like a neuropsychological evaluation, but not a neuropsychological evaluation. And so why can't it just pick and choose from this conflicting testimony what it determines to be credible?
I think, Your Honor, that the reason why the district court abuses discretion is that it both the answers to the questions, all of the experts relied on Mr. Vossen's answers to questions about how he would act in a case, what would be a good decision for trial strategy, what would be a bad decision, do you want a jury trial, do you not want a jury trial, what would be the advantages. That was what the experts relied upon in making.
To be fair, in part. I mean, there were other questions that were asked too, and where he demonstrated confusion. He didn't know what day of the week it was. He didn't know who the president was. I mean, there were quite a few other indicia of confusion and memory loss.
As I understand, everyone agreed that he knew what happens in court and what the procedures were. The issue was that he couldn't put it in chronological order, and his short-term memory, everyone agreed, was poor. And so he would be unable to participate in his own defense.
So there were some indications, Your Honor, of cognitive deficits. That is correct. The issue, I think, is how those cognitive deficits affect his ability to rationally consult with counsel. It is clear from the results of Dr. Vaccarella's testing and Dr. Gilbertson's testing are very similar, in that Mr. Vossen tested with some deficits, in most of the testing, he was on the low average or the borderline edge of the testing. He was not in the, below competency on that, other than there was one test that he was severely impacted on, which was one of those motor skills tests that Dr. Vaccarella tested. So I think the test before the court is whether or not he has the ability to rationally consult with counsel, whether or not the cognitive deficits that are demonstrated by the...
Ms. Passy, here's what I want to say. It sounds kind of silly, and it's a little bit of a reiteration of what's been said by my colleagues. But, you know, if we agreed with you and we said, well, the trial judge blew it and credited two experts over the other, I mean, even if we got to that point and we sent it back, you could be next week trying to pick a jury or pretrial motion, and we have a fellow who's 82 and his deficit, his ability to comprehend and understand is going to fluctuate day to day. I mean, aren't you back in the same place where defense counsel is going to say he's not competent, and then you're back with another Rule 20? I mean, at some point we have to give the trial court all due deference, because how can we sit here and read expert reports and say, well, you called it wrong? That was a lousy question. My question is, you're not out of the ball game yet. I mean, a month from now, maybe he's clearly lucid, right? This is kind of a matter that continues to flow and has a lot of features that could come and go.
I think that is correct, Your Honor, that competency can be a fluid thing. If this court were to reverse and bring it back down, it's true that the defendant could immediately bring another Rule 20 motion, and we could be doing this whole process again. I don't think that, however, that fact insulates
the so you're arguing that you want to get this case on. He's old. You don't want him to pass away before it happens. So what if we disagree with you? What happens? What happens with Mr. Vossen? If we do not agree with your logic and we would affirm the district court, then what happens?
Well, then the competency proceedings pursuant to the rules would commence, and Mr. Vossen would be evaluated for civil commitment. So that's what would happen. And yes, it is true that the state would have
possibly. And during the civil commitment process, my vague recollection of trial court procedure is that that is periodically reviewed. And in fact, he could be restored to competency, correct?
That is true. It is. I believe it's a 6-month review, I think it's 6 month or year, and it's evaluated by whatever body he's committed to, if he's committed, in fact. So it could be periodically reviewed, Your Honor. But I don't think that could insulate these state's ability to challenge a finding of incompetency. I mean, Minnesota Rule of Criminal Procedure 28.04 says that the prosecution can appeal from any pretrial order. And of course, there's the critical impact test that is built in to the rule, as well as the case law. Certainly the
And Ms. Passy, besides the standard of review, there's also Rule 20.01 Subdivision 5, which says that where a defendant's competency is disputed, the rule provides that in the absence of proof of the defendant's competency by a preponderance of the evidence, a court must find the defendant incompetent. And it sounds like the judge in this case followed that rule and didn't find by a preponderance of the evidence that he was competent.
I agree. That's what the district court found, Your Honor. So our challenge is a challenge to whether or not the district court correctly found in weighing the evidence, whether that preponderance of the evidence standard was met, of course, with the abuse of discretion standard as set forth in the Gantt-Pat decision to be reviewed by this court. It's clear from the record that Mr. Vossen demonstrated not only factual understanding of the, you know, what is court, what is a judge, what is an attorney, what do they do, but he had opinions and was able to express rational understanding of how that would impact, how decisions would impact his case. He was able to describe what a positive, you know, pleading guilty is going to send me to prison for the rest of my life.
I don't disagree with you. I'm very sympathetic to your position, Ms. Passy. I know you want to get this case prosecuted, and I know you want to, you know, put this one behind you. But the problem, I think, in this case is not that he didn't understand what a court proceeding is or what a judicial proceeding is, but that when witnesses start taking the stand, he doesn't have any ability to digest the information as it is coming into court to assist his counsel in his own defense at trial. That's the finding by the district court. And I mean, there is plenty of stuff in the record that talks about his inability to recall short-term, you know, things that impact his short-term memory. So when we're talking about that aspect of participating meaningfully in his own defense, isn't the district court's finding enough based on enough evidence in the record?
I think, Your Honor, that the district court relied, again, I think more on the findings of the deficits versus how the findings of the things that could help compensate for the deficits. For example, all of the experts testified that Mr. Vossen still retains the ability to learn new information. He has the ability to deposit that information. It's the ability to take that information out of his brain and then say it. That's really the issue. And I think
we do have on page 19 of the district court's order, though they varied on the extent of his impairment, each of the three experts opined that defendant displayed serious memory complications during their interviews and cognitive testing, Defendant's struggles primarily centered on a diminished ability to learn, store, and recall newly learned information. So if he learns something new during the trial, he's impaired in helping his counsel. So why is that finding an abuse of discretion?
I think it's an abuse of discretion, Your Honor, because of the testimony of the experts, of the abilities, of the ways to help Mr. Vossen recall newly learned information during trial. For example, they testified, I believe numerous of the experts testified, that written information was much more impactful for helping Mr. Vossen to recall information than oral information, giving him cues, which I understand could be somewhat limited if he were to testify at trial, but providing cues of context, sending notes to Mr. Vossen, or asking questions that provide context, or, you know, leading to a particular area, are those kind of things could provide, account for some of the deficits in the ability to store information that was found by the experts. So I think that's why it's an abuse of discretion, Your Honor. I see I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll turn to respondent counsel.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Judy Marshall. Together with Kent Marshall, who is present but not arguing, I represent the defendant respondent, Algene Vossen. Mr. Vossen is an 80-year-old man who, due to his cognitive impairment, lacks the ability to rationally consult with counsel and participate in his own defense. The state has failed to meet its burden by preponderance of the evidence that the defendant is competent to stand trial. The district court gave proper weight to the evidence. Its factual findings are not clearly erroneous, and the finding that the defendant is not competent either to consult with counsel or assist in his defense is supported by an ample record. Further, this court should decline jurisdiction to review the matter because there's no final order.
Well, Marshall, that's a flaw I find with your argument as far as your briefing is concerned. Why this court would have jurisdiction because a final judgment rule doesn't apply on pretrial state appeals.
Understood. There are limited availability for pretrial appeals. Those are articulated.
They can't try their case.
But in this case, there are six, it's actually 6-month review. And I think the state indicated she didn't know whether it was 6-month or 12-month review. This matter is subject to 6-month review, at which point under the rule, subdivision 8 of the criminal rule of procedure 20.01, the prosecutor may apply for the court to review competency. The court does have an avenue to review this.
I mean, the district court has another avenue to review it, but the state is still precluded from prosecuting its case unless and until there's a competency finding. So what happens if there's 6 competency findings that are in your client's favor? Does that create a critical impact? And what's the litmus test?
It's a practical matter for the use of judicial resources. Even if this case were to decide the matter, or if this court were to decide the matter tomorrow, I assume that a petition for further review would be filed with the Minnesota Supreme Court. As this stands, the decision came out on November 5th, ordering 6-month reports to the court, at which point the state could ask for further competency proceedings. November 5th, that gives us May 5th for a review. So just as a practical matter in terms of seeking relief, the state has that avenue available to it. As Your Honor rightly pointed out—
Speaking of that review, I found it interesting that the district court wants the niece with whom he is living to be the person who checks in periodically with the court.
Your Honor, the rule itself is what gives an indication as to what must be reported. And the rule itself says the person charged with the individual's care. In this case, as of right now, that is the defendant's niece.
Ms. Marshall,
as Your Honor rightly—
Let me ask you about the 3 evaluations. So we don't have a neuropsychological evaluation in this particular case. We have something that's close to it, a couple some metrics that were some testing metrics that were conducted by Dr. Gilbertson, Dr. Baccarella, but no neuropsych, and which is what Dr. Aiken specifically says is needed in this case. So hypothetically, if the state obtained a neuropsychological evaluation and the finding were that he's competent to proceed based on that testing, would you agree that the defendant is competent to proceed?
I think I would have to speculate, Your Honor. That's not the case. Neuropsychological testing.
I know it's not the case, but in the evaluation of whether due credit is given to the evidence of competency, would you agree that the results of a neuropsychological evaluation would supersede the findings of by some lesser evaluative situation?
No, Your Honor, for two reasons. Dr. Aiken did testify that a neuropsychological test would be important in this case. It would be important for understanding what the white matter on the physical testing was, but that alone is not determinative of the issue, because we also have symptoms of the cognitive and age-related decline coupled with the information about his ability to consult with counsel and assist in his defense. And then the second reason is one of the bases for recommending that testing was for his ongoing treatment. Dr. Vaccarella testified specifically that her opinion regarding competency would remain unchanged because the neuropsychological testing essentially is not required for a finding of competency, and it would not impact her finding of competency in this case.
And so it's your expectation that the cognitive and age-related decline would not be something that is reversible. Is that right?
Your Honor, again, I would have to speculate because this is subject to review, but again, he's an 80-year-old man. There is white matter on his MRI that is consistent with cognitive and age-related decline. He is getting older, obviously outside of the record, but reports that increasing levels of care are needed. So yes, it would be our expectation that would continue to decline.
So then why aren't we in a critical impact situation? If he's going to continue to decline by your own reports and by the objective reports, why aren't we in a situation that we need to make this decision now?
If Your Honor is inclined to make a decision that there is essentially jurisdiction or a reason to hear this case, then the respondent relies on a thorough and careful analysis that still demonstrates the state failed to meet its burden by a preponderance of the evidence. Again, thorough and careful analysis. The district court wrote a lengthy decision, and it shows that it gave proper weight to the evidence and that the findings were supported by the record. The state, by contrast, and I find it interesting, focuses on a number of factors that fail to address the heart of the matter, which is competency. It makes conclusory statements about the impact of competency on the ability to consult with counsel while providing scant analysis at best. It fails to point to anything in the record that would indicate the defendant could competently consult with counsel and assist in his defense. I believe that they referred to some of these prompts that could help or assist the defendant in understanding newly learned information. But the state's own expert said that new information stored in what he called the defendant's mental filing cabinet could only be recalled in a haphazard manner. So that's the state's expert, Dr. Gilbertson, at page 22 of the testimony, called the mental recall haphazard. The state also, I guess in its reply brief, focuses a lot on cognitive decline not being the question, but the question is the ability to consult with counsel, but then doesn't really give any facts or reasoning as to why the district court erred or made factual findings that were clearly erroneous as to that issue. The state focuses again on factual competence in a circular argument. While factual competence was found by the court, that does not extend to those other factors that the defendant is able to consult with counsel. The big pieces here being timeline, chronological events, the defendant not even knowing counsel's name, reporting it as John multiple times throughout the testing, despite being told the contrary, despite numerous meetings with counsel. The state again focuses on things that aren't necessarily relevant, like IQ. Dr. Vaccarella testified that IQ does not necessarily tell us about memory and cognition. So that doesn't have a bearing. The state focused a significant portion of its time at the contested hearing on bereavement. Again, I believe Dr. Gilbertson testified that bereavement is not formally recognized, but even if it is, Dr. Vaccarella and Dr. Aiken testified that that alone could not account for the cognitive issues in this case. And if that was the case, then his cognitive issues should have improved for Dr. Aiken's second interview, which clearly did not happen. The state attempts to focus on and discredit to an extent Dr. Vaccarella's test results because of the motor skills and the impairment with motor skills. But we have in the transcripts that she testified at page 125 of the contested hearing that she did not rely on the data from the motor testing in her to form her opinion regarding competency. She used that as a baseline. So again, I think that's a bit of a red herring that the state is focusing on defects with the testing or maybe what the defendant can do, but not focusing on what limitations the defendant has, which are significant. The state in its reply brief talks about the ability to maintain attention for 5.5 hours for testing, even though, you know, we have clear findings that he needed breaks, that he has difficulty with concentration and attention span, difficulty conveying information, susceptibility to suggestion, and those things hinder his ability to consult with counsel. The state again fails to point to, or it argues that cognitive impairment alone does not show impairment in consulting with counsel. But what we do have in the record is a clear finding from the district court that the defendant had difficulty conveying relevant details to his attorney. He had difficulty formulating a trial strategy, including deciding to testify. And I believe the state just conceded that some of those cues that could be given wouldn't necessarily help him if he were to testify in his own defense. So clearly there's some sort of concession about his limitations in preparing his own defense. And we also have a finding that he's impaired in his ability to rationally communicate with counsel regarding the pros and cons of various pleas. Now, the state focuses on, again, that factual competence, which is not at issue here, but it doesn't address the rigidity of thinking, the inability to respond appropriately to questions. Both Dr. Vaccarella and Dr. Aiken testified that sometimes the defendant would just answer right, not answering the question, which seemed to indicate to them some confusion. So while the district court did find factual competency, the state's conflation with factual competency to his ability to prepare and assist in his own defense, it just doesn't work. There are significant factors with the short-term memory, huge in a criminal case, being able to convey in a timeline details of a case. Now, although the state focuses on stored information over time, and although this is an alleged offense that occurred a long time ago, we also have findings of the court that the defendant would be susceptible to changing information or essentially replacing old information with new information as a part of his diminished competency. The court found that the defendant had clear problems maintaining attention and concentration, semantic and phonetic errors, inaccurate information, or information of low quality. That especially being told that the defendant could respond or give information when prompted is an unworkable result in this case, because of course, information in a criminal case, it needs to flow from the defendant himself. And if he's unable to do so without prompting, then there's no effective way for him to communicate with counsel. So unless there's further questions, we're asking this court either to decline jurisdiction just as a practical resolution is more available at the district court level through the statute as it exists. Alternatively, to affirm the decision of the trial court based on the copious information in the record that supports the factual findings made by the district court in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Marshall. And back to you, Ms. Posse.
Thank you. Just briefly, Your Honors, on the jurisdictional issue, certainly holding that the defendants, that the state is not able to challenge this, the state would be essential to hold, basically holding that the defendant can always challenge the finding of competency if he goes through trial and is subsequently determined not to be competent by the appellate court, but that the state could never appeal from a finding of incompetency, which is particularly problematic in a case like this where the defendant is 80 years old. So I think that's certainly, this court does have jurisdiction under the rules here. Just to respond briefly to something Judge Riley said, I believe it was Judge Riley, the district court did not find that it would be the niece who would do the ongoing supervision. However, the competency or the commitment proceedings have been stayed pending this appeal. If in fact Mr. Vossen were not to be committed and were to remain in the custody of his niece, the rule does say that if the defendant is not committed, the person charged with the defendant's supervision must report to the court periodically, not less than every 6 months, on the defendant's mental condition. The state would have serious concerns if the niece were the one to be providing that information to the court. Some of the arguments from counsel have suggest that the state is conflating factual competency with rational competency. I don't think that's accurate. It's clear from the reports of all of the experts that their determination of how these cognitive deficits that were evaluated and found by Drs. Vaccarella and Gilbertson were how the they relied heavily on what kind of rational decisions was Mr. Vossen able to make as a when asked questions about this case. So they weren't just asking, do you know what a judge is? Do you know what a jury is? They were asking, what is the evidence about this case? What is your strategy for proving that you are not guilty of this offense? What are the issues in this case? He was able to express his concerns that he would not have a fair jury trial because of press coverage this case has had in the city of Willmar. He was able to express concern that he had an alibi witness, his wife, who had passed away, and that he would not be able to present evidence on that because his wife had passed away. It was these factors, responses, which are most accurately and thoroughly set forth in Dr. Gilbertson's report, who gave us kind of question-answer verbatim format, that is what demonstrates that Mr. Vossen was able to make those rational, reasoned decisions about this case. As of the factual, the short-term memory, certainly as counsel conceded that it is true that the facts, the long-term memory doesn't appear to have significant effects on Mr. Vossen's long-term memory. And the facts of this case obviously occurred in 1974. So that would be the facts of what happened at that time. It is not, I believe, contested that he would be able to recall those facts. It is the short-term memory that was the issue for the district court. And it is the effect of these deficits on his ability to rationally consult with counsel that I think has demonstrated by his answers to questions, the testimony that he was able to learn and able to process new information and recall it if given proper, given the opportunity to consult with counsel and provided contextual information if possible. So that's why I believe that the district court abuses discretion. And if the court has no further questions, I would ask that this court reverse and remand. Thank you.
There appears to be no questions. I want to thank both counsel for appearing today on our Zoom platform. The matters are submitted. A decision will be issued in the statutory timeframe.